It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today.
Oh, hello, hello, welcome, one and all. It is May the 10th, 2021, and it's 1900 UTC, which means it's time for some news. Thank you so much for tuning in. Today is okay. It's a Monday. I had big plans, big ambitions for the weekend, but I don't know what to call it. I guess you could say that I've spent the last year getting used to not doing anything outside of the house, and so now the prospect of going out of the house to do stuff is a bit of a chore. It's a little bit troubling, but whatever. That's the way it goes. And the way it goes here is we always start the way we always start. And that's with the world.
World news. World news.
World news. Yep. So, first up, we've got some troubling news from India. The bodies of at least 40 people have washed up on the banks of the Ganges River in northern India. The discovery near the border between the states of Bihar and Uttar Pradesh was confirmed to the BBC on Monday. It's not clear how the bodies came to be there, but local media reports suggest they may be COVID-19 victims. Some media reports say as many as 100 bodies have been found, and that their condition suggests they may have been in the river for several days. There is a possibility that these bodies have come out of Uttar Pradesh, a local official, Ashok Kumar, told the BBC after questioning local residents. He said the remains would be buried or cremated. Officials said the bodies appeared to be bloated and partially burnt, and that they may have ended up in the river as part of the practice of cremating victims of coronavirus along the river Ganges in Uttar Pradesh, India's NDTV news channel reported. That's November Delta Tango Victor news channel reported. Uttar Pradesh is India's most populous state. A second wave of the virus is ravaging parts of India, with deaths rising significantly in recent weeks. Most of the country's crematoriums have run out of spaces. Country is now the epicenter of the global pandemic. This is very sad indeed. Experts believe the death toll is much higher than what's being reported, and they've reported more than 22.6 million cases and 246,000 deaths. This is endlessly troubling and sad news indeed. Another human tragedy going on right now is over there in Palestine. We've got two stories here about this. One was one I read earlier today, and then we have one that just broke about an hour ago. So first up, Israeli police stormed the sacred Jerusalem compound that holds the Dome of the Rock amid mounting international concern over worsening violence in the city. Following the most serious clashes in the city since 2017, the Palestine Red Crescent reported 305 people had been injured after officers in riot gear clashed with Palestinian demonstrators in East Jerusalem. The mounting toll from the violence came as Israel's police commissioner, Kobi Shabtai, intervened at the last moment, following appeals from the Israeli Domestic Security Agency, the Shin Bet, and the Israeli military to call off a controversial annual march by Israeli nationalists through the Muslim quarter of the Old City, amid fears it could provoke further escalations. After Shabtai's announcement, the approach to the Damascus Gate into the Muslim quarter was blocked by two large trucks. Anger had been mounting for 2 weeks among Palestinians ahead of a now-delayed Israeli court ruling on whether authorities were able to evict dozens of Palestinians from the old city's Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood and give the homes to Jewish settlers. Hundreds of Palestinians and several dozen police officers have been hurt in recent days in clashes in and around the old city, including the sacred compound, which is known to the Jews as the Temple Mount and to Muslims as the Noble Sanctuary or Haram al-Sharif. The compound, which has been the trigger for rounds of Israel-Palestine violence in the past, is Islam's third holiest site and considered Judaism's holiest. Seven of the injured from Monday's clashes were in serious condition, with local media reporting that a seven-month-old Israeli had been injured by stones thrown at her family's car. Monday's morning's early morning incursion by Israeli police firing tear gas and stun grenades into the Haram al-Sharif compound site of the Al-Aqsa Mosque had raised tension significantly given the huge historical sensitivity over the site, not least during the holy month of Ramadan. The latest violence occurred as the UN Security Council scheduled closed consultations on the situation in Jerusalem on Monday. Diplomats said the meeting was requested by Tunisia, the Arab representative on the council. The decision to cancel the part of the annual Jerusalem flag march that enters the Muslim quarter followed concerns from senior Israeli security officials it could worsen the already dangerous situation. Yeah, it's just absolutely terrible, the abuse and terrorism that the Israeli people keep committing against the Palestinians is really something. Here's the next story, and this is from the BBC. The past one was from Guardian. This is BBC. Jerusalem violence. Rockets fired from Gaza after major clashes. Here's the retaliation. Rockets have been fired toward Jerusalem from Gaza amid spiraling tensions between Israel and the Palestinians. No injuries were reported, though Israel's parliament was evacuated as sirens sounded. Gaza's Hamas rulers had threatened a strike after hundreds of Palestinians were injured in clashes with the Israeli police on Monday. The past few days have seen the worst violence in the city for years. More than 300 Palestinians were wounded in the confrontations with Israel police outside the mosque, the Al-Aqsa Mosque, in East. Later, a march by Israeli nationals was rerouted. So this is what we talked about. The Jerusalem Day event marks Israel's capture of East Jerusalem, home to the Old City and its holy sites, in 1967, and usually sees hundreds of flag-waving Israeli youth making their way through Muslim quarter via Damascus Gate, chanting and singing patriotic songs. It is regarded by many Palestinians as a deliberate provocation. This year's march is also taking place in the final days of the Islamic holy month of Ramadan. There's a map showing the layout of the city, and yeah, just it's anyway, it's a helpful visualization. I can't describe. The latest violence follows days of clashes between Palestinian and Israel forces in the nearby Sheikh Jarrah district of East Jerusalem, with possible eviction of Palestinian families from their homes by Jewish settlers, a focal point for Palestinian anger. We'll see what happens here, but it's not looking good. Palestine's been cut off from all resources for a long time. Israel keeps bombing and burning down their houses, so I'm sure this will just continue, since no major world power supports Palestine. All right, let's keep on a moving. That's just sad news. It just bums me out. There's terrible stuff going on. Go to France. French soldiers accuse government of trying to silence warnings of a civil war. Several members of the French military... Gosh darn it, I clicked the... Several members of the French military fired a second salvo at Emmanuel Macron's government in an open letter accusing it of cowardice, deceit, and perversion, just weeks after a first letter said the country was heading for a civil war. Like the first letter, it appears in the right-wing magazine Valeurs Actuelles. It was reportedly signed anonymously by active military personnel and is appended with a petition on the magazine's website for others to sign. The letter's signatories refer to the seventh verse of La Marseillaise, the French national anthem, that refers to the avenging slain elders or following them to their coffins. It was published in support of the first letter, published on April 21st, the 60th anniversary of a failed coup d'etat against General Charles de Gaulle over his support for Algerian independence. Signed by a number of retired generals as well as at least 18 serving soldiers, including four officers, the initial letter warned of the disintegration of France, evoking what it calls the perils of Islamic extremists and the hordes from the banlieue. It also accused anti-racism groups of creating hatred between communities and cautioned that lax government policies could spark chaos, requiring military action to protect our civilizational values. Afterwards, furious ministers accused the signatories, who were supported by far-right Rassemblement National Party leader Marine Le Pen, of breaking military rules and threatened legal action against them. The armed forces minister, Florence Parly, said, "The armies are not there to campaign, but to defend France." While the interior minister accused Le Pen of having her father, Jean-Marie Le Pen's, taste for the sound of marching boots. The second letter, published late on Sunday evening, batted off threats of punishment and launched an all-out attack on the government, accusing it of trampling on veterans' honor and sullying their reputation when their only fault is to love their country and mourn its visible decline. To quibble about the form of our elders' tribune, instead of recognizing the evidence of their findings, you have to be cowardly to invoke a misinterpreted duty of reserve in order to silence French citizens. One must be very deceitful. To encourage the army's senior officers to take stand and expose themselves before angrily sanctioning them as soon as they write anything other than battle reports. One must be quite perverse. So, pretty strong words coming here. Story continues on, but basically we get former President Francois Hollande told France Inter, Where is the professional code? How can we let people think that today the army would be driven by such feelings and by such a desire to challenge the very principles of the Republic? Jean-Luc Mélenchon of Mélenchon of La France Insoumise said, "They are seditious and cowardly. I'm not afraid to say my name and what I will do if I'm elected, and that's to purge the army of its dissenting members." Olivier Faure of the Socialist Party said the letters were worrying and that the left should reflect on all these threats. So yeah, it looks like it's kind of a spooky time. Very concerning news coming out of France. And we've got one more story here for you, and then we'll go ahead and
get the
play.
News over with. I want to hear the music.
There he is. We'll get one more story.
Get the news over. Get the news over with. I want to hear the music.
We'll get one more story out of here. Deadly bombing rocks southern Afghan province as Taliban and government agree on ceasefire. At least 11 people were killed and dozens injured in the bombing of a bus in Afghanistan's southern Zabul province, officials said on Monday. The attack came as the Taliban and the Afghan government said they would observe a 3-day ceasefire for the Muslim religious holiday of Eid starting this week. The blast took place late on Sunday night, said Zabul's provincial governor spokesman Gul Islam Sial, adding that 25 people were injured, including women and children who were in critical condition. Violence in the country has been rising sharply in recent weeks after the U.S. announced it would withdraw troops. The bus bombing in Zabul province along Kabul-Kandahar highway came as the insurgent Taliban announced late on Sunday they would declare a 3-day ceasefire for the religious holiday of Eid ul-Fitr later this week. The Afghan government reciprocated with the truce offer, as it had in the past. But in a statement released Monday, Afghan President Ashraf Ghani went further, urging the Taliban to announce a permanent truce to end the bloody war. The ceasefire announcement came as the U.S. continues to pull out its last 2,500 troops from the violence-threat country, despite faltering peace efforts between the Taliban and Afghan government. So you can only hope things look up after the ceasefire. This came to us from... And we're going to go ahead and play a song, and then I'll be back. Thanks so much. This is called The Ballad of Johnny Butt, and it's a song.
Johnny Butt was a man with a real strong will to survive. He just keep pushing on, even though he was barely alive. So shoot it up. It just don't matter. Johnny says he wants to go do it, says he wants to.
Listening to Anon Radio, powered by SDF Public Access Unix System.
That is 100% correct. You're listening to Anon Radio, powered by SDF, and this is news to me. We're a show Monday through Friday, every day at 1900 UTC, and then stick around at 1930 UTC every single day, Monday through Friday. Well, Monday through Monday, it's every day of the week at 1930, is the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe, and that's a fun show. There's lots of cool running gags, running different things that happen. We go off and do lots of fun. It's just, it's very fun. It's hard to explain. It's very dubious. It's worth checking out, and usually takes, you know, give it a week. If you're new and you're like, I don't know, Marcus, what are you talking about? Give it a week, and it's, you're usually hooked by then. So it's definitely super fun. It's a blast. So stick around for that. That's at 1930 UTC. And if you can't, that's fine. Go to the archives. There are, I think over 2,000, there's 2,000 and something shows in there. So you can definitely catch up with the Dubious Goals Committee. All right, we're going to go ahead and pick up with some more news here. Okay, so next up, this is something that is probably every tourist's worst nightmare, and definitely shakes one of my goals for traveling. This comes to us from China. Man left dangling from bridge after glass breaks. A man in China was left dangling from a bridge after its glass panels were damaged in high wind. The man was visiting the 100-meter-high bridge in the Pian Mountain in the northeast of the country when the incident occurred on Friday. Several pieces of the glass floor were blown away by winds that reached up to 150 kilometers an hour. It's 90 miles an hour for in the U.S. It is thought that China has about 2,300 glass bridges and a number of glass walkways and slides. They are designed to attract thrill-seeking tourists and capitalize on China's growing domestic tourism. An image widely shared on social media shows the man dangling in the middle of the bridge located in a scenic area near the city of Longjing. That's good tea. Firefighters rushed to the scene to rescue the man. However, he managed to get back to safety with the help of staff. Get back to safety himself with the help of on-site staff. The tourist was taken to hospital for observation and counseling and is now said to be in stable emotional and physical condition. The area has been closed, according to Longjing City's Weibo page. Weibo? I don't know. I just remember that it's a Chinese site. I'm all over the place, sorry. I just had a work meeting that I wasn't 100% sure what they wanted to know, and then I kind of had to ramble to figure out what the heck they were trying to get at. I wasn't prepared for the meeting. All right. Anyway, so yeah, that happened in China. Here's some sad news. At least 26 killed in Bangladesh boat crash. We've talked a lot about boat crashes this year. At least 26 people have been killed after a speedboat packed with passengers collided with a vessel transporting sand. Oh, we talked about this. Okay. Whew. Sorry, I must have clicked on the wrong bookmarks, or one of the wrong bookmarks. This is something we talked about last week. So, still sad, but not another death, and not another boat crash. All right. Well then, let's go back to a lighter story. China says it will set up a line of separation at the summit of Mount Everest in order to prevent climbers mingling with others from Nepal. It comes less than a week after mountaineers and authorities at base camp in Nepal warned of rising cases of COVID among climbers. Everest stands on the border between China and Nepal, and mountaineers climb it from both sides. It's not yet clear how China will enforce the rules on the mountain. The summit is a dome of snow with space for six people standing, and on busy days, climbers have to queue to gain access to it. A team of Tibetan mountaineering guides is being dispatched to the summit to set up the line. It will be in place before the arrival of a group of Chinese climbers who are currently on their way. Mountaineers from the Chinese side will be prohibited from having contact with anyone from the Nepal side and will not be allowed to touch objects that have been placed at the peak. It is not clear whether the Tibetan guides will remain in the area to enforce the restrictions. The director of Tibet's Sports Bureau told Chinese state media that the only time that climbers from the north and south side of the mountain come into contact is at the summit. At present, tourists without a permit are forbidden to enter the Chinese base camp, and the country has banned foreign nationals from climbing the mountain. However, Nepal, which relies heavily on income generated from Everest expedition, has allowed foreign climbers, with about 400 permits allocated this season. More than 30 sick climbers were evacuated from the Nepalese side in recent weeks as the country faces a second coronavirus wave. Last week, the Himalayan Rescue Association, which runs government-authorized medical clinic at base camp, told BBC it had received confirmation of positive cases in some climbers flown out to Kathmandu by expedition. In the last 3 weeks, Nepal's daily case rate has skyrocketed with 2 out of 5 people tested returning positive results. The country has now recorded more than 394,000 cases and 3,720 deaths. Very wild times indeed. It'll be interesting if they enforce that. Golly, sorry, it's taking me a second. This comes to us from the AP. The children in this mountain village usually spend their days caring for goats or cows and playing with their dogs. But on the rare occasion that the press comes to Ayohuaytemoc, the kids are lined up and handed guns. They pull on the shirts of community police force, cover their faces with handkerchiefs, grab their guns. Fake wooden ones for the youngest. For the youngest, sorry, I had to sneeze. And line up in formation on the town's basketball court to pose for and march for the cameras. These images have shocked people across Mexico and beyond, and that's the point. Few of those children actually wield guns on patrol, but such displays here and in other oft-forgotten communities are desperate attempts to attract the federal government's help to fend off organized criminals. They are the poster children for a country at war that doesn't speak of war, said Juan Martin Perez, director of the Network for Children's Rights in Mexico. The remote region of Guerrero State is one of Mexico's poorest and one of its most violent. It's a key corridor for drug production and transit, especially heroin from opium poppies. Communities of the ethnic Nahuas like Ayohuaytemoc are caught between warring criminal bands and suffer kidnappings, extortion, and murder. On a recent afternoon, four boys cared for goats and played with puppies on a slope looking out over mountaintop, running to the horizon. Asked about training with guns, the oldest, 12-year-old Valentin Toribio, said, "No, now they only march when the reporters are going to come and interview us. It's so the president sees us and helps us," he said. "But there's at least some real training, too." Valentin said he had liked learning to fire a gun and hopes to become a policeman when he gets older. His older brother taught him to shoot, though he normally only holds a gun for the performance. "When I'm older, I'll carry the gun, because now it can be dangerous," he said. His 11-year-old cousin, Giovanni, is less interested in the performance because he's too busy. "I'd take care of the goats, then I go to my pigs, then to give water to Filomena, his donkey. If there's any free time, he plays basketball. He yearns to return to school, closed for the past year by the pandemic. Asked if he would shoot an enemy, he issued a convincing no." A short time later, three of the four joined about a dozen others in a display for visiting reporters. They marched and displayed firing positions from one knee, seated and flat on their stomach. So it's very sad. The result, says Abel Barrera, founder of a local human rights group, "We've normalized that these children don't eat, are illiterate, are farm workers," he said, and mocked the outrage that outsiders feel at seeing the children carrying guns. "We're used to the Indians dying young, but how dare they arm them?" Bernardino Sanchez Luna, co-founder of a vigilante coalition, said authorities did nothing when gang members once attacked the community of Rincón de Chalta in the same region. That prompted the group to distribute a video in 2019 of children performing military-style drills with sticks. Asked why, he said, "Because they didn't pay attention." Sanchez Luna said the government wound up donating some housing material for the displaced, but the violence continued. And the story goes on for a ways on the AP. Yeah, it's a really sad story. It's very interesting, the use of, it's like, people aren't shot, you know, seeing people starving and dying isn't really enough to get people to act anymore. So, but child soldiers... Oh man, we got to get down there. Something bad's happening. Yeah. So here's something else that's sad and bad. Body of arrested Myanmar poet Ket T returned to family with organs missing. Myanmar poet Ket T, whose work declared resistance to the ruling junta, has died in detention, and his body was returned with the organs removed, his family said. A spokesperson for the junta did not answer calls to request comment on the death of Ket T, who had penned the line, "They shoot in the head, but they don't know the revolution is in the heart," his Facebook page said. He was 45. Ketty's wife said both of them were taken for interrogation on Saturday by armed soldiers and police in the central town of Shuibo in the Sagyang region, a center of resistance to the coup in which elected leader Aung San Suu Kyi was ousted. "I was interrogated, so was he. They said he was at the interrogation center, but he didn't come back, only his body," his wife, Cha Su, told BBC Burmese Language News. "They called me in the morning and told me to meet him at the hospital in Monua. I thought it was just for a broken arm or something, but when I arrived here, he was at the morgue, and his internal organs were taken out." She had been told at the hospital he had a heart problem, but had not bothered to read the death certificate because she was sure it would not be true. Reuters was unable to reach the hospital for comment. Chasu said the army had planned to bury him, but that she pleaded with them for the body. She didn't say how she knew her husband's organs had been removed. He died at the hospital after being tortured in the interrogation center. The Assistance Association for Political Prisoner Activist Group said in a bulletin that put the toll of civilians killed since the coup at 780. It's just awful news there. All right, we'll get to some Africa news. But first, I'm going to try something out. You may not notice it, but I'm going to try and compress the silence, and we can't fit extra stories in. One sec. Hey, and just like that, we got 3 minutes back. I do say lots of uhs and dead air, I guess. Maybe I'll start doing that. I'll record the show, compress it, and then see, remove all the uhs, the blank space, compress the silence, and then see how much more news I can fit in. Anyway, I also wanted to say, sorry if I was a little too, I get a little heated whenever I talk about the Palestine conflict, so sorry about that. All right, let's talk about some African news, just some headlines. The Lesotho mine recovers high-quality 370-carat white diamond. London Stock Exchange listed Gem Diamonds on Monday announced it had recovered a high-quality 370-carat Type II white diamond from the Letsing mine in Lesotho. So that should fetch a pretty penny. That sounds pretty exciting. Shortage of water and sanitation hamper response to cholera in northern Mozambique. Nearly 900,000 people are projected to face severe hunger in Cabo Delgado, Niassa, and Nampula provinces of northern Mozambique, compared to 950,000 before the harvest from April to September. The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, OCHA, OCHA, in southern and eastern Africa reported on Monday. And EU has agreed to provide 500,000 euros to WFP, that's Whiskey Foxtrot Papa, for pandemic recovery in Rwanda. The United Nations World Food Program, or WFP, has welcomed 500,000 euros from the European Union to provide technical support to Rwanda's COVID-19 recovery effort. So that's cool. All right, let's hit up some U.S. news real quick, because, you know, we got to at least mention the U.S. a little bit. A cyber criminal gang that took a major U.S. pipeline offline over the weekend has acknowledged the incident in a public statement. "Our goal is to make money and not create problems for society," DarkSide wrote on its website. The U.S. issued emergency legislation on Sunday after Colonial Pipeline was hit by a ransomware cyber attack. The pipeline carries 2.5 million barrels a day and it accounts for 45% of the East Coast's supply of diesel, petroleum, and jet fuel. The operator took itself offline on Friday after the cyber attack. Work to restore service is continuing. The U.S. government relaxed rules on fuel being transported by road, meaning drivers in 18 states can work extra or more flexible hours when transporting refined petroleum products. U.S. fuel prices at the pump were largely unaffected on Monday. There are fears that this could change if the shutdown is prolonged. Independent oil market analyst Gaurav Sharma told the BBC a lot of fuel was now stranded at refineries in Texas. Unless they sort it out by Tuesday, they're in big trouble. The first areas to be hit would be Atlanta and Tennessee, then the domino effect goes up to York. And they have a map showing the pipelines that go from Houston, the Houston area, up there in Pasadena and stuff, and it goes across Louisiana, Alabama, Mississippi, and on up through the coast. It doesn't cross Tennessee, but apparently there's depots or sublines along the way that go to Georgia and Florida and up Tennessee. So that's what's happening there. In Colorado, we've got another shooting. A gunman opened fire at a birthday party in Colorado, killing six adults before killing himself. The shooting happened just after midnight in a mobile home park on the east side of Colorado Springs. Officers arrived at a trailer to find six dead adults and a man with serious injuries who died later at a hospital. The suspected shooter was the boyfriend of a female victim at the party, attended by friends, family, and children. He walked inside and opened fire before shooting himself, police said. The birthday party was for one of the people killed. Neighbor Yennefer Reyes told the Denver Post she woke to the sound of many gunshots. "I thought it was a thunderstorm. Then I started hearing the sirens." Police brought children out of the trailer and put them into at least one patrol car, she said, adding that the children were crying hysterically. So that's very sad. Colorado Springs is a city with 465,000 people and is Colorado's second busiest city after Denver. So very sad. And that's really all the time we got. But yeah, thanks so much for listening. I hope that this show came together all right. I think we're getting better. We're slowly getting better at it.
Well, that sounds neat.
Stick around for the duties.
Our time's coming to an end. Thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow and every weekday, Monday through Friday, before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe at 1900 UTC. Talk to you then.
The Dubious Goals Committee. Committee calls you. The Dubious Goals Committee. It dubiously calls to you. You've been listening to Anon Radio, powered by SDF. This is a recording. Press 1 for dubious goals.
7, 6, 5.